Before I jump straight into the story of Purim, I would like to do a refresher on God's feasts, also known as Moedim, or appointed times, or better known in our Western culture as holy days, and not to be confused by holidays. I'm speaking from experience in the church, but there was very little to no discussion on God's feasts. You may have a different experience as mine, but I think the Passover was the only feast that I remember hearing about. The Passover is considered one of the seven feasts. Now, not all the ones that I'm going to mention are necessarily feasts, but they are generally known as such. And we're not going to go into details for this conversation, as we will focus on Purim, which is not part of the seven feasts. That may have sound confusing, but I promise you, I'll clear it up. Most of us have heard of or seen a menorah. A menorah is a seven-branch candelabrum that was used in the tabernacle and in the temple in Jerusalem. It was also a representation of God's seven feasts. The seven feasts, beginning with the spring feast, starting with the holy day of Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread, Feast of First Fruits, and Pentecost. The winter feast being Feast of Trumpets, Yom Kippur, and the Feast of Tabernacles. A menorah has seven branches, but we only mention six feasts. The six outside branches represent the feast that we just mentioned, and the middle branch is a representation of the day of rest, the Sabbath. I've also heard it explained where the Passover is considered as a separate feast and not together with the Feast of Unleavened Bread, but you get my drift. Now, Purim was not a commanded feast by God, unlike the other ones I mentioned earlier, but Purim was eventually agreed to be a feast by those who lived during this time. And this is where the story begins. We can read about this feast in the book of Esther. It's a small book of only 10 chapters, but it's filled with so much suspense, action, drama, and of course, faith. The story starts with Israel being in captivity by the ancient Medo-Persian Empire. Now, to gain more understanding, it helps to know that the kingdom of Israel was divided into the north and south before this time. The south, better known as the kingdom of Judah, was invaded by Babylon, and the Jews exiled to the banks of the Euphrates River by King Nebuchadnezzar. Just right after this, the Medo-Persian Empire led by King Darius and King Cyrus defeated the Babylonians. King Cyrus eventually became the head king and allowed the Jews to go back to Judah to rebuild the temple. But for whatever reason, some Jews decided to stay back. After King Cyrus, King Ahasuerus takes the reins. Chapter 1 begins with the king throwing the mother of all parties. On the seventh day, he calls on his queen, Queen Vashti. For whatever reason, the queen refused to heed the call of the king. It obviously looked bad that this beautiful queen had rejected the king. So, the king asked his cabinet what should be done. The cabinet wisely advised him that if he didn't do something, the rest of the women of the kingdom will also be disobedient. In return, the king decreed that Queen Vashti will never come before the king and that he will give her position to another who is better than her. And this is where Esther comes into the picture. The men of the king gathered all the beautifully young maidens of the kingdom so the king could choose one. Esther was fatherless, but she was brought up by her uncle Mordecai. Esther was not only beautiful, but she drew the attention of Haggai, who oversaw all the women. This gave her an advantage and was placed front and center of the king. During this time that she was being prepared for the king, Esther was commanded by her uncle Mordecai to conceal that she was a Jew. Esther was eventually chosen from all the young maidens and was loved by the king. This came to great benefit to the king, and this ended up saving his life. Mordecai overheard that two of the king's eunuchs were plotting to kill the king. Mordecai told Queen Esther, and the queen told the king on behalf of Mordecai. Once this was investigated and proved to be true, the eunuchs were hanged and the plot was thwarted. We now move to what I would call the second act of the story, as the king promotes Haman, the Agagite. All the king's men were called to bow down and paid homage to Haman, but Mordecai did not. The scriptures did not say exactly why, but Mordecai probably knew the kind of evil man that Haman was. Regardless, Mordecai was transgressing the king's command, and the king's servants let him know. And the king's servants also let Haman know of this. Now, instead of Haman handling the situation with Mordecai only, which it appears to me that he had all the right to do so, he instead decided to destroy all of Mordecai's people when Haman was told they were Jews. So, as they cast pur, meaning that they casted lots, or as we know it in our Western culture as drawing the short straw, Haman used this to convince the king to have a decree to kill the Jews because they had their own law, God's law, and did not obey the king's law. The king agreed and set up this decree to kill all Jews, young and old, women and children, and to plunder their goods. Later, Mordecai hears about this, and so do the Jews. The Jews, in their sorrow, put on sackcloth and ashes and begin to cry out, mourn, fast, and weep. Esther eventually learns about this via one of her eunuchs that Mordecai gave the information to. Mordecai also asks Esther to beg for the king's favor and plead with him on behalf of her people. Esther explained that she cannot just go in front of the king, that she must be summoned, or she will be put to death. Mordecai reminded her that she shouldn't think that just because she is the king in the king's palace, that she is safe. Mordecai also states in chapter 4, verse 14, what I believe is one of utmost importance in this story. It reads, "And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such time as this?" End quote. Esther agrees to act, but asks Mordecai to gather all the Jews from the city of Susa and fast with no water or food for 3 days as she prepares herself to go in front of the king. Esther then puts on her royal robes and goes into the inner court of the king's palace. Thankfully, she won the favor of the king, and the king states that he will even give half of his kingdom to her if she desired. Instead of taking half of the kingdom, Esther asked the king to join her in a feast and to invite Haman. During this, Haman will still be plotting to kill Mordecai, as Mordecai will still not bow down to him. And we see the pride of Haman as he expresses to his friend and wife all the honors given to him by the king. Yet, he expresses that he will not be happy until Mordecai is dead. Hearing this, his wife and friends tell him to build some gallows to hang Mordecai. On that night, the king could not sleep, and the scriptures do not say why. I discerned that it was God himself that took the sleep from the king. Since he could not sleep, the king asked to be read from the Book of Memorable Deeds. In this book, the king read the story of how Mordecai saved him from the plot to kill him by the eunuchs. He then asked if anything was done to honor Mordecai for this deed, and the eunuch stated that nothing was done. The king, looking to honor Mordecai, quickly looks for someone to help him honor Mordecai. Now, Haman was on his way to talk to the king about hanging Mordecai when the king, on chapter 6, verse 6, asked Haman, "What should be done to the man whom the king delights to honor?" And Haman, with all his pride, thought that, of course, the king was talking about him. So Haman, in verse 7 through 9, says, "For the men whom the king delights to honor, let royal robes be brought, which the king has worn, and a horse that the king has ridden, and on whose head a royal crown is set. And let the robes and the horse be handed over to one of the king's most noble officials. Let them dress the man whom the king delights to honor, and let them lead him on the horse through the square of the city, proclaiming before him, 'Thus shall it be done to the man who the king delights to honor.'" End quote. And you guessed it. The king then orders Haman to do that for Mordecai and not for him. Uno reverse card. Keep that in mind. Uno reverse card. I can only imagine the face of Haman, and it only gets worse for him. Remember that feast that Esther was going to have with the king and Haman was invited? Well, Haman went to this feast, and the king asked Esther what her desire was. Esther beautifully and humbly pleads to the king and reveals the plans of Haman against the Jews, her people. The king grants a request of the queen, and Haman gets hanged. And yep, you guessed it. He gets hanged in the gallows that was initially prepared to hang Mordecai. Another Uno reverse card. Keeps getting worse. The house of Haman was then given to Esther, and then Esther appointed her uncle Mordecai over the house of Haman. With this power, Mordecai was able to cancel the initial edict to kill the Jews by Haman. And now the Jews were ordered to kill everyone that attacked them and to plunder their goods. Another Uno reverse card. Now, I'm using this analogy of the Uno reverse card because I'm seeing it repeat itself in the story, but the scriptures themselves on chapter 9, verse 1 state, on the very day when the enemies of the Jews hoped to gain the mastery over them, the reverse occurred. The Jews gained mastery over those who hated them. End quote. Hallelujah. The Jews go and kill their enemies to include the 10 sons of Haman. But through all of this, they did not plunder, showing a mercy that their enemies would have not given to them. After this victory, Mordecai obliged everyone to keep this feast as remembrance of all that had happened. To remember, as chapter 9, verse 21 reads, as the days on which the Jews got relief from their enemies, and as the month that had been turned for them from sorrow into gladness, and from mourning into a holy day, that they should make them days of feasting and gladness, days of sending gifts of food to one another and gifts to the poor. End quote. Final thoughts. Here are some things to think about from this story for our lives today. Take some time to place yourself in today's environment as you relate to the story. The Jewish people in captivity decided to keep God's law instead of the law of the Persian kingdom. This is how Haman pled his case in front of the king to kill all the Jews. Will we keep God's law instead of man's law? Can we rise to the challenge as Esther did to defend believers in God's law, even if it will cost us our lives? Will we know if we have been put here for just this time, like Esther was for that time? Will we have faith that when it appears that there is no hope, God being just will reverse what was for our destruction and turn it up for our good? The Feast of Purim is the first feast of the year and is set to start this year at sundown on March, Saturday the 23rd, through sundown on Sunday the 24th. As a remembrance of this event, I'll always read a book of Esther with my family. This year, I may go a step further by sending a gift of food to other believers and gifts to the poor. Maybe you can also start your own Purim tradition in remembrance of all that God has done for his people, for us, his people. Until next time.